Okay, good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning. So today is the third of our three parts for this term. We are moving along in the Shemaneh Esrei. And as we, I don't like when I do that, but last time we did start, we did more than just start, but we did begin this bracha of Es Tzemach David, and today we will, we'll finish it. We might repeat a few things. I ask for forgiveness, and we will do Shema Keilenu. That's the bracha that we are going to concentrate more on today. But Es Tzemach still needs a little bit more because we rushed it at the end last week. And today, these are the last two of those middle brachas that we've often spoken about, the 12/13 middle brachas of Shemayne Esrei that are unique to the weekday Shemayne Esrei. And then in Emirat Hashem, next term, when we come back and we start again, we will be doing the last three brachas, which are, just like the first three, are always said, Shabbos, Yontif, weekday, and everything, the last three. But today, as we say, we'll do the last two of the middle brachas. So, with Es Tzemach, as we were talking last time, this is the bracha, for the redemption, for Mashiach, for Davidic reign, as it says. And just quickly, I'll just read you very, very quickly again, because I know we did do it last week, so maybe I'll just read you in the English of the article, the offspring of your servant David, may he speedily cause to flourish, and enhance his pride through your salvation. For we hope for your salvation all day long. Blessed are you, Hashem, who causes the pride of salvation to flourish. Okay, so we were talking last week about how central the concept of Mashiach is to Yiddishkeit, and that's why this bracha is here in Shemayne Esrei, one of our very, very central, so to speak, needs, if you want to say, central and essential needs of every individual, as well as for the Jewish people as a whole. And we mentioned the Rambam, and we mentioned how it's a halacha that a person has to wait for Mashiach every day and the entire day. Just one important thing I think we didn't mention last time, the interesting word that's used here is Es Tzemach David. I know we slightly said something about it, but we say the sprouting should come forth from David. Now, we all know that Mashiach comes from David, as we said. But there's an interesting discussion. Is it just that Mashiach is a descendant of David? Or according to the Kabbalists, is actually a reincarnation, a Gilgal of David HaMelech himself? And what's so unique about David that he has to be the one that's reincarnated into Mashiach? So it's explained that David literally represents, because of what he did throughout his lifetime on working on himself, on refining himself to the point that he himself says in Tehillim that I have killed my Yetzirah by my fasting. In other words, through literally working so hard in directing and in refining and in using every opportunity to serve Hashem, he literally embodied, in a sense, almost the concept where if a person looked at him, they would be inspired to serve Hashem, just by looking at David HaMelech. That's what David HaMelech, so to speak, became. And this is the same idea as Mashiach, and that's also why we know that Adam, who was the first man, his name is Adam, which is Aleph Dalid Mem, which stands for Adam. The Aleph stands for Adam, the first man. The Dalid stands for David, and the Mem stands for Mashiach, because this is actually the ultimate, the completion of man, and that's what David HaMelech represents, and that's why we say Es Tzemach David. So it helps us remember that when we are saying this tefillah, and that's what we're waiting for, that we should be able to see, so to speak, Adam, David, in Mashiach. That's what will happen. Okay, so that will be that. Now, just to go a little bit further, one more thing that before we, I again might have mentioned a little bit, but the word that we're using here is Tzemach David, right? To sprout. What does this mean? So very interesting. According to some opinions, this is like the idea where when something sprouts, it's happening slowly. It's like it's underneath the ground. You know, you plant a seed, you water it, and you hope that the ground is soft, and you hope that the air is not too cold and not too hot. And then hopefully, and what ends up happening is something sprouts forth, which means, and this is a very, and we're going to see soon a little bit more in depth about this, but the idea is that we have to, at the moment, be living with Mashiach, which means we are right now, even in the time of exile, planting the seeds and nurturing the seeds and living with the concept of redemption. That's the only way that it sprouts forth afterwards. Just like a seed is underneath the ground and then it comes up. So it's up to us now to live with it in order for it to be able to, and that's why we use this word, to actually sprout forth. Okay, so just want to see. Okay, then, and we mentioned last time a lot about the anticipation and how when after 120, first question that will be asked of a person, did you wait for Mashiach? I saw a beautiful thing that it says that a person shouldn't think, well, if I'm concerned about after 120, that will be my first question. Well, I'll wait till I'll get really old. So it says, no. Don't wait to anything. Don't push it off. Every single day, that's what we say, every single day, we should be anticipating Mashiach. We don't know when our last day is, but it's not just that. Kol hayayim, every single day and throughout the entire day, a person should be living with this reality and know that this is the first question that will be asked because it's such an important part of how we're supposed to be living. Okay, just now, just want to show you one more thing. I know we did quote a Rambam last time, but now this is a different Rambam. Last time we quoted a Rambam from Hilchas Melachim, which talks about the concept of Mashiach. This Rambam here is very interesting. This is from a different part of the Rambam. It's an introduction to what's called Perek Chelek, a part of the Gemara. And he explains in this part, in a sense, almost, what is it that we're yearning for when we talk about this concept of Mashiach? So I'll just read you something beautiful. This is the words of the Rambam himself. He says, "Ve'ein anu misavim, we don't desire, umikavim, and we don't hope, limais ha-Mashiach, for the days of Mashiach, l'roiv ha-tvuais v'ha-isher, because of all the physical wealth that we're going to have, and, you know, we're just going to live, you know, physically, materially very comfortably. That's not why we are hoping." And the Rambam uses interesting language, "V'loisha nirkav al susim," not that we should be riding on horses. I guess the equivalent now would be to have the, you know, the nicest car. That's not what we're waiting. And really, the truth, we're waiting for be able to go on an airplane, that we're taka waiting. But that's not what we're waiting for Mashiach for. Why are we anticipating? What is this anticipation? What is this that we are living with, this constant awareness that something is missing now and we are waiting for it to be completed with Mashiach? So what is it? So the Rambam says, the prophets and the pious ones look forward to the days of Mashiach and yearned for them, because then the righteous will be gathered together in fellowship, and because goodness and wisdom will prevail. So it's more about the spiritual benefits and the welfare and the goodness in the world that will happen when Mashiach will come. They desired it also because of the righteousness and the abundant justice of the Messianic King, because of the salutary influence of his unprecedented wisdom, and because of his nearness to Hashem. That's also why we single out a person, because we're talking about, obviously, the era of Mashiach, but Mashiach himself will be the one that will model all of this, and this is what we're waiting for. So we're waiting for that ability to have somebody who will model to us how we can truly be close to Hashem. And we mentioned last time a little bit this whole idea that Mashiach is so central to the whole purpose of creation. Initially, when Hashem created the world, he created it with the intention, so to speak, to fulfill the purpose will be when Mashiach will come and when there will be a true revelation of godliness in the world. So this is obviously what we are waiting for. And the world, as a world as we know it, our experience day by day now, is not the reality of Mashiach, because the world as we know now is what we call Olam. Olam, world in Hebrew, actually is from the language of Helem, hiddenness. It is a space, it is a reality, it is an experience which hides godliness, which covers up what is true. Mashiach will uncover, it will remove all the obstacles, it will remove all the barricades, which then we will be able to see who is the true reality, and that is Hashem. So that's what we are anticipating, that's what we're waiting for. Okay, now, I just want to see one more thing before we go. Okay, and now, I know we mentioned this last time, but I'm thinking if we should say it here. No, you know, we won't say this here, we'll say it after. Okay, there's one more interesting thing, this we didn't say, this is a fascinating word that comes in both. I'll show you this word that we say, Vikarnoi, Torum Bishuasecha, and then we finish off Baruch Atah Hashem Matzmiach Keren. What is the word Karnai? What is the word Keren? What does this word mean? So I'm looking in the English. In the art scroll, they translate it as pride, who causes your pride of salvation to flourish. just looking in the big, yeah, again, also pride. I'm just looking at the Nusach HaRi. I mean, it's the same word, but how they translate this word. And I'll tell you, there's really four ways to translate. Power. They use the word power. Pride and power. What does this mean? What does this Keren mean? So the truth is, this is a very, very key word, which comes in this paragraph, which actually tells us what Mashiach is and what he will accomplish, and therefore why we are waiting for him so eagerly and why we're anticipating him and why it's such an important part of the tefillah. So the word Keren actually can be translated in four different ways. The first way, a Keren is a corner. Okay, so Keren is a corner. A corner, as we know, is where two lines meet, and then it makes a corner. The truth is that a corner is not something new. The two lines are complete on their own, and just when they meet each other, all of a sudden there becomes another space called a corner, right? The corner really is nothing on its own. It's just the two lines that meet. Another meaning, and we'll see what that means, is Keren, we say it actually at the beginning of davening. We say in Brachos, we say, Elu dvarim she'adam eichel periseim ba'olam hazeh. These are, this is actually from a Mishnah. These are the things that a person eats of the fruit in this world. And then, v'keren kayemes la'olam haba. What does this mean, keren kayemes la'olam haba? What exists for the world to come? Keren is like the seed, which actually over here we might, the kernel, which in a sense is not seed, but more kernel, which is the essence of the matter. The actual essence, not just the fruits that come out, but the essence of the thing. Another meaning, and we know we have this with Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain the second time, holding the second set of luchos, we have a very interesting pasuk that says that there was a keren ar, there was a ray of light that came out of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the word Keren over there is a ray, which is obviously referring to a ray of light. That's actually where the origin of this idea of the anti-Semitism of that Jewish people have horns, because they translated it as horns. Instead of a ray of light, they said Moshe Rabbeinu had horns. And the truth is, that's the fourth definition. So the third definition is this ray of light. And the fourth definition is, just like an animal, a ram or whatever it may be, an ox, has a keren, which is, you say, a horn. What does it mean? It's the sign of strength. That's what he uses to be aggressive to other animals. The idea being, toikef v'chayzek, strength. So keren is also from the word strength. And that's what we used here, pride and power. That's how they translated it. But it actually means all four things. What's the connection? Where do they come in? What does it have to do with anything to do with Mashiach? And what are we asking for? So the truth is, they're all dependent on each other and they build up this whole concept. When we talk about a Keren being this corner, as we said, a corner is a funny existence. On the one hand, it's not really there because it's just happens to be that you put the two lines together and then you got the corner. But on the other hand, now there is a corner. This is really what Mashiach has. This is a very, very interesting Kabbalistic concept that we say, and this is really David HaMelech himself. What does this mean? We know we call him David HaMelech, Malchus, kingship. What's a king? So a king is an interesting thing in Yiddishkeit, because although we look to a king, we think of a king as something very, very powerful and perhaps has a lot of, I don't know, a very strong sense of ego and a strong sense of self. In Yiddishkeit, that's not what a king is. A king is the conduit for the blessings for the people. In other words, the purpose of the king is to be able to supply the people with everything that they need. So even though it's true he is a form of authority, which means that he has something where he can actually access something that the people don't have, right? Something higher than the people. But for what does he access it? So that he can be a conduit to pass it on to the people. What does that mean? It's a very interesting thing. This is the concept of Malchus in Kabbalah. So if we look at David HaMelech himself, David HaMelech is a fascinating existence in his own right. We know that when David HaMelech was born, immediately it says that he really shouldn't have been alive, right? He didn't have any years, right? The famous Medrash, that David HaMelech was born, he was born almost like a stillborn. And what happened? How come he was able to live? And he lived 70 years? Because Adam HaRishon, in his kindness, gave him 70 years of his life. So Adam's years were not his own. I mean, David's years were not his own. David's years were gifted to him by Adam HaRishon. And yet, what did David do with all those 70 years? He used those years to accomplish so much, not so much about himself, but what he can do for the Jewish people to elevate the Jewish people. So this is really, in Yiddishkeit, what a king is. So it's the concept where they are something quite, you know, powerful, and yet really, they're nothing on their own. They're just a conduit. They take from what's higher, in other words, all the blessings of Hashem, and then they become the transport, the ability to bring it down to the people whom they rule, whom are dependent upon them. This is what, so this is the idea, as we said, that's what a corner is. On the one hand, it's nothing. On the other hand, the two lines are meeting, and now there's a new space. There is this corner. Now, interestingly enough, if you think about what David HaMelech did, as we said, on the one hand, he really didn't have anything of his own. It was all Adam's light, all Adam's years. And yet, he accomplished so much where he elevated the people to be almost ready to build the Beis HaMikdash. That's what David did. And we know not only did he do that, but we call him, he will be the reincarnation. He will be Mashiach. So he brought about the beginning of the concept of Mashiach, of the revelation of godliness in the world. So this comes to, as we can say, this comes to the other translation of Keren. What is the other translation? As we say, that just, we said that the third translation actually we used was the ray of light. That's what David HaMelech does. David HaMelech, and this is the Keren, brings, and not only does he bring, but he himself is the embodiment of the light of Hashem in this world. So that's the ray of light. Now, how is he able to reveal this ray of light? For that, you need a tremendous strength. And this is what David HaMelech did by working on himself, by constantly challenging himself to grow. And we say an interesting thing. When we mentioned about Moshe Rabbeinu coming down from the mountain with the second set of luchais, that's where we have this ray of light on Moshe. It didn't have it the first time when he went up on the mountain. He didn't have it all the times before that he had met Hashem. When does he bring down? When does he come down? And so to speak, this ray of light is shining only after the breaking of the luchais and then the going up again and begging for forgiveness and then coming down again, which shows us that the strength comes from when we have gone through a negative experience. Perhaps we were even broken and shattered like the luchais were. But then what do we do with those broken pieces? We put them together again. And then we have this ray of light, which means that we need to find that inner strength to fix ourselves, to repair. That's much, much harder. It's always so much harder to fix. You know, a lot of times you say a child's holding something, you say, don't let it break, it'll be impossible to fix. Fixing is very hard. We know once something is broken, to fix it is very difficult. It takes a tremendous amount of strength. And that's why the word Keren is like that horn, which is to do with the strength. And that's what we have. That's what Mashiach will do. So he will spread the light. He will not only spread it, but he will bring it down to the lowest of the lowest places. And he will reveal how even in the lowest places, they can elevate themselves to be worthy of receiving that light. And that comes from the incredible strength of Mashiach. And this also, as we said, this is the kernel of truth. This is the ultimate, this is the purpose of Mashiach. Okay, just before we go further, that's what the word Keren that comes so often in this bracha. Just want to see, before we go more. Okay, so I feel that there might be a drop of repetition because I have a different source book. I have a few different sources. So I just, there's such, so many beautiful things and I don't want to miss. Oh, so there's one word that we didn't, not just one, a few words, but one more word that I would like to concentrate on that is in this bracha. We use the word, as we said, v'karnei tarim bi Yeshua secha, in your salvation. And then we say, ki lishu oscha, right? Your salvation, we wait a whole day, every day, right? What does this word mean, Lishua Secha? So he says like this. There's a few ways to understand this. What does it mean, your salvation? So one of the beautiful explanations to the Siddur explains like this. He says that when we're talking about your salvation, we don't just mean that we are dependent on you for our salvation. We're actually talking about your salvation, which means that when we say this bracha and we're anticipating and waiting for Mashiach, we should realize that even if we might not so yearn for Mashiach, maybe our life is so good that everything is so wonderful and so perfect that it's okay, we'll wait another day, nothing will happen. Even if that's the case, let's not forget who else is in Golos with us. We say when the Jewish people went into Golos, the Shechina went into Golos with them. In other words, Hashem finds himself in Golos. We understand that. He's not revealed. You look around the world, you know that there's no obvious God in the world. Nobody relates to him. Nobody understands. Nobody looks first to God. So what we have to realize is that we are davening for the salvation of Hashem, because Hashem is waiting for us to go out of Golos, and then he goes out of Golos. As we say, the beautiful Aruch Chaim HaKadosh explains so beautifully in one of the Psukim in Bereishis that he gives a very beautiful analogy. He says that if a father is teaching a child to swim and the child's petrified of the water, the father has compassion on the child. So what does the father do? So the father, when the child has to come into the water, jumps into the water and then opens his arms, and the child will jump into the father's arms and enter the water. Now, what happens when the time is up and, you know, it's time to leave the pool? What does the father do? He lifts the child and he puts the child out of the water, and only then does he leave the water. He doesn't get out first and leave the child in there. He gets out second. So he gets in first, but he gets out after the child. And the same thing with Hashem. He comes to Golos first, and then he receives us in Golos. When it's time to leave Golos, he takes us out first. And only when the last Jew is out of Golos does he actually leave. So this is also what we have to have in mind. Lishuasecha, for your salvation. Even if we're comfortable, Hashem is definitely not comfortable. So daven for that. There's a few other beautiful ones. Another thing it says, interesting, that a person could also be davening for is that even though maybe we're comfortable physically, let's not forget that spiritually we are definitely deficient while we are in Golos. Well, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, but Hashem is not revealed. So therefore, for sure, our service of Hashem is lacking. So at least, even if not for the physical, so to speak, yearning, in our mind we can understand that there's something missing spiritually. Let me just see what other one. And then he says an interesting thing also, that when we say Bishuasecha, that we wait for your salvation, another way to look translate it is, we're waiting for you for your salvation of us, right? That's what we're asking to be saved. What we're saying is that even when we don't deserve to be saved, you will provide the salvation. Kilishuasecha or Bishuasecha, even if we have no merit on our own, you will provide the salvation. And then, I know we said this last time, but I feel bad. I just want to repeat because it's a very important one. This is the one that the Chidah explains really, this is how we understand this bracha in a total way. And he explains very beautifully. He says that even when the Jewish people are in Golos, and even when we're in a level of Golos, and we feel ourselves, things are quite upside down and nothing is clear and we don't have clarity and we're not on a very high level and we're not doing never mind understanding, but we don't even do the right thing. We say, Ein biyad Yisrael ela hakivui. Even if the only thing that we have left is the fact that we're anticipating the redemption, kidai heim ligeula. They are worthy of the redemption just because of the anticipation, even if they're not worthy for any other reason. And we see that in this paragraph, the Chidah says, that's why it's written this way, because it says, Ki lishuascha kivinu kalayim. What does that mean? Ki lishuascha kivinu kalayim. That Hashem should save us. Why? Because we wait for your salvation. So he says, what is that? How is that a reason? So he says, because he asked the question, if we deserve the salvation, well, it doesn't matter if we're anticipating. If we don't deserve, how is the anticipating going to help? So that's why he says, this shows us that even when we don't deserve the salvation, just for the sake of the anticipation, just for the fact that we are constantly aware and missing and feeling this lack, that in itself make us worthy, that we should be redeemed. And that's what the Chidah says. It's a very, very beautiful way to understand the wording in the thing. Okay, just want to see. Oh, now, another beautiful thing. And this really, I think this really also explains a lot why this is such an essential bracha. Because it's true, we are anticipating and waiting something for the future, where Hashem will bring the Geula, Hashem will bring Mashiach, and therefore in the future, we will, you know, we're waiting, like hopefully not too long in the future, right? I was saying every day we have to wait that it should come today. But nevertheless, it's now waiting for something that will happen. So there's actually a deeper way to look at it as well. When we say this bracha, what we should be feeling, it's explained beautifully. There's a very beautiful sefer that's it's called Shomer Emunim, and it says like this, that every moment that we anticipate, that we spend our time, so to speak, thinking about, both in our mind and in our hearts, he says we are actually fulfilling, according to some opinions, a mitzvah. And even if it's not a mitzvah from the Torah, then it's a mitzvah from the Kabbalah, so to speak, that is that we should be waiting for Mashiach. And therefore, he says, that's why when we pass away, as we said, the first question will be, did you wait for Mashiach? So while we are actually anticipating, we are fulfilling a mitzvah. And what is so special about that? Because the idea is a very powerful one. Because what that translates practically for us in this moment is that when a person thinks, as we said, matzmiach, like the seed, we're planting the seeds now, and it's just all it has to do is sprout forth. They will live their life with a whole different perspective. What's the perspective? Not just for the future, but for the immediate now. That right now, I am not bound by golos. What does that mean? When you know, it's interesting in life, and this is proven, I mean, this is, I think, part of also pain therapy. When somebody knows that something will only be lasting for a few more seconds, for a few more minutes, it's much easier for them to bear. Not only is it easier, but many, many times what happens is that thing itself almost disappears because it's so short-lived. So it's almost as if it doesn't exist at all. So if we live with this reality of anticipation, what that means is that we live at least spiritually in a realm where we are living in a redemptive state. What does that mean to live in a redemptive state? It means that we are not slaves to the golos. And what we're talking about here is obviously we are still unfortunately enslaved by the nations and by the rules and by the whatever illnesses and all the things that are out of our control. But spiritually, when a person lives in a geula mindset, means in a redeemed mindset, what that means is that every single moment when they are choosing what they will be doing, how they will be responding, how they will be doing a mitzvah, how they'll learn Torah, how they're going to look at somebody else, they're going to do it in a totally different way. They will do it in a way, not in a golus mindset where I'm not in control, I can't help it, I was born angry, so I'm going to be angry, I was born stingy, I'm going to be stingy. No, you live in a mode where you're beyond limitation, where you're beyond any blockages, no obstacles exist, if it has to do with serving Hashem. Because we know, as we said, that's the main thing that will happen when Mashiach will come. Everything is, Hashem is here. He's here for sure. It's just that it doesn't look like it to us. So the curtain, so to speak, will be opened. So if we live as if the curtain is open now, then any obstacle that comes our way, which seems to stop us from serving Hashem, we will look at it as if it's a very sheer curtain. It will almost not be there. And we will be able to serve Hashem in a much freer way. This is the concept of this bracha, to live with this attitude of Mashiach now, not when it will come tomorrow or today, please God, in an hour or in 10 minutes or in 5 minutes, but this minute, this second, now, in our decisions that we make, we live with this reality that we are actually free now. Because the Maharal says magnificently, he explains that when Hashem took us out of Egypt, this wasn't just obviously a physical, you know, beautiful, redemption that he took us out of Egypt. It was obviously a very spiritual redemption, but he says much deeper than that. When Hashem took us out of Egypt, he literally changed us. He changed our essence. We can never be slaves again, ever. The Jewish people are never enslaved. What does that mean? Because in some ways we are enslaved, but we are not enslaved spiritually. We now have the status of a free person. And the status of a free person is one that makes decisions based upon the fact that they feel empowered, that they can. And that's what this bracha is about. So we ask Hashem to give us that realization, that perspective, to help us with that perspective, so that we can internalize that and that our whole day will be lived in a very different way. So that's really a very big part of this bracha. I want to see if there was anything else before we move on to the next one. We mentioned Lishua Sechas to do with that it's even if we don't deserve. And that's why we also say Kol Hayom. It's interesting. We don't just say every day, but we say the entire day, as we said, because this should be our perspective the entire day. Just one small other thing, which was a very different, a beautiful idea. I had never seen this before. A very beautiful concept. Even though we're talking about the concept of Mashiach, we're waiting for the big salvation, so to speak. This concept of redemption, of being free. But also, there was one very interesting thing that it said that you can have kavana when you're saying this bracha to actually all the different small salvations that you might need throughout the day. So if somebody's going to encounter something that to them looks like a real obstacle or a real blockage in something, you can have in mind that Hashem should free you from that and provide salvation. That's something that you can also have in mind when you say it, even so to speak, for the small things that you might be encountering throughout the day. Okay, and one more last beautiful one. I'm sorry, I hope you don't mind. There's just so many beautiful things, a very magnificent one also has to do with the perspective. We say that the Baal Shem Tov actually says, this is not the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov explains this, but there's a very famous line that b'mokim shemachshavtei shel adam shom hu nimtza. Where is a person? A person is where their thoughts are. You know, a lot of times when you're talking to somebody and they are like their mind is somewhere else, you look at them and you say, where are you? Are you here? No, you're not here. You're somewhere else, right? Where are you truly? You're truly where your mind is. So here we see something very powerful. We say, the Baal Shem Tov explains, that if a person will live with this reality of Mashiach, and that's why we say it three times a day, then where will they be? They will definitely be in that reality, because that's where their mind is. So we have the ability to transport ourselves, even though not physically, but mentally and spiritually, to a different, to a higher space. And that's what we are asking Hashem to help us with. And that's what we daven for when we say this bracha three times a day. Okay, so one last thing before we will go to the next bracha. Now, I know we did this last time a little bit, but there was a few. I rushed it, and I think I marked the ones I didn't tell you. We were talking last time how amazing one of the great models of this living, literally living with this anticipation, was the Chafetz Chaim. We mentioned that last time, and we know the Chafetz Chaim lived not that long ago, about 100 years ago, and he literally lived with Mashiach. We know the Chafetz Chaim is very, very famous for his books on speaking, on Lashon Hara, on how careful we have to be with our speech. But sometimes what people are a little bit less aware of, and where he was just as much passionate about, was the concept of living with Mashiach. To the point that actually the Chafetz Chaim said that one of the reasons that he writes so much about how careful we have to be with our speeches, because that's the way we're going to be redeemed. That's when we'll be eligible to be redeemed, when we watch what we say. And we actually see this from when Moshe Rabbeinu in Mitzrayim. And you remember that whole encounter that he had when the Egyptian hit the Jewish man, and then Moshe Rabbeinu killed the Egyptian, and then then these Jewish people saw him and they were going to tell on him. And when he heard that Jewish people were going to tell on him to Paroi, what was his first reaction? Not so much fear for his own life. He said, oh my gosh, maybe the Jewish people are not worthy to be redeemed. Why? Because there's Lashon Hara amongst the Jewish people. So Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned about the fact that they might not be able to be redeemed. And we find that the Chafetz Chaim said this, that a lot of his reason for writing so much about us being careful with Lashon Hara was so that we should be worthy to be redeemed. Because his whole goal, I mean, as we know, this is the Yiddishkeit, as we say, is for the time of Mashiach when Hashem will be revealed. And we find that it says that, not says, I mean, it's documented, whenever the Chafetz Chaim would send letters, and he sent letters to many Gedolim and many people because he was one of the great leaders of the time, he never ever concluded a letter without mentioning, like, the merciful one should grant us to see the coming of Mashiach. Many people think, yeah, that's always how we end a speech, you know? It's just lip service. But for the Chafetz Chaim, this wasn't a speech ending. This was a true tefillah that he had. And he never, ever omitted it. This was something that was like almost the main thing. We find, and we have a few very interesting places that we see that with him. There was a conference in a rabbinical assembly in Grodno in Poland that was interesting. It was a lot of great rabbanim got together to strengthen the learning of Torah amongst the masses. And the Chafetz Chaim spoke, and he said a very interesting line. He said, "Ein Yisrael nigalin, the Jewish people will not be redeemed, min ha'umais, from amongst the nation, ella bischus ha'Torah, only by the merit of the Torah that they learn." What does that mean? Of course, very important. We have to learn Torah. That's a mitzvah zaseh, right? But what will happen when we learn Torah? We will be redeemed. Again, emphasizing that the learning of the Torah should be obviously for the sake of learning Torah, but what will it bring? It will bring the redemption. And that's why we mentioned last time that he was very into that we should learn different parts of Torah that has to do with what we will be doing in the Beis HaMikdash. And we know a very interesting thing. It says the Chafetz Chaim himself was a Kohen, as we mentioned last week, and he was very into the fact that he should be very proficient, and even simple Kohanim should know exactly how to behave when Mashiach will come. Very interesting thing. It says, interesting thing, he says that there's a Gemara that says that if a person makes a promise that I'm going to become a Nazir on the day that Mashiach comes, he's actually forbidden to drink wine because Mashiach could come any day. Now he's promised he's going to be a Nazir. He has a problem now because Mashiach is here. This was how the Chafetz Chaim used to repeat all these things to show us how we have to literally live with Mashiach as a reality every single moment. I just want to see. Okay. And I'll just read you one other thing, a letter that the Chafetz Chaim wrote. Let me just see. It says it was a letter to Rabbi Rafael Mordechai Soloveitchik. He says, "I received your precious sefer." So he had obviously put out a sefer, Yad Rama, which is full of Talmudic acuteness and proficiency. "I would like to take the opportunity to bring to the attention of his honor, being that all the signs which Chazal specified for the coming of Mashiach have been fulfilled, there is no doubt that we now stand on the eve of Mashiach's arrival. Therefore, if all the giants of Israel in our time would listen to me, I would advise that they harness their Talmudic capabilities to author compilations for the common folk on concepts related to the Beis HaMikdash." Again, this is a letter that the Chafetz Chaim wrote. So these are his own words and how he lived with it. I just want to see one more thing. Okay, there's one more beautiful, one or two more, and then we'll... Okay. Very interesting. Also, the Chafetz Chaim wrote a lot and on a lot of different topics. But one of the things that he wrote, it's called Sefer Machne Yisrael, because he lived during the time of World War I. And it says that he wrote laws that to do with Jewish soldiers, right? What they have to know while they were in the army. You know, all different halachic questions come up if you're serving in an army. And in that, three long chapters were included explaining the obligation to long for Mashiach's arrival. This was a halacha sefer, right? And soldiers don't have that much time. And obviously people want to know what to do. But to the Chafetz Chaim, this was as important as knowing how you're going to keep Shabbos and Kashrus in the army, was that the soldiers have to anticipate Mashiach's arrival, as well, it says, as a description of what will be when he comes. Very, very fascinating. And one more interesting thing, it says that when, in his time, the steam engine of the train became very popular, and he said, you know why? Because Mashiach is coming, and Mashiach doesn't want that it should take us a very long time, that we should have to go on a horse and a buggy. Rather, we need a quicker form of transportation. And he actually brought a mashal, and he said that if a father sends his child away because the child unfortunately has to be sent away, and the father says, you're going away for 5 years, what will happen as the 5 years are almost coming to a conclusion, the father will not wait till the 5 years finish and then start making preparations to bring his son back. Rather, way before that, because the father is so excited and waiting for his son, he will do everything possible to make it easy that when the 5 years are up, his son could come instantly. That's why the Chafetz Chaim said, Hashem is making transportation quicker. That's what we all thought when the airplanes, and now it has to all just come back so that we can go very, very quickly to Israel. And there will be absolutely no extra delays. Let's see if there was any more. Okay, I think that's all. Oh, sorry. Hope you don't mind. Just one more thing. It's a very beautiful thing. It says that the Chafetz Chaim and many tzaddikim had this custom, but the Chafetz Chaim at night when people were sleeping would do what we call tikkun chatzos, you know, midnight, get up, cry about the Beis Hamikdash. And there were a few times, most of the time people in the household were sleeping and people didn't hear what he would say. But there was once or twice that people actually could overhear what he was saying because he got into a very big emotional state. And it says like this, they would listen behind the door, and at first they heard him thanking Hashem and praising Hashem for all the goodness and all the kindness, but then his voice, tone of voice changed, and it became a very demanding voice, it says. And what would he be demanding? And he would say, what reward do we receive for our devotion to the study of Torah and fulfillment of mitzvahs? This is how he was talking to Hashem. Troubles, persecution, and murders. In all the lands of our dispersal and wanderings, we have guarded the Torah and held onto it tightly. How much longer will we wait? We are all torn as a broken piece of earthenware. Try find even one Yid whose heart is still whole. And then he turned, and interesting, he was so emotional, it says that he started to cry out to the tzaddikim who had passed away. And he said, where are you? Why are you quiet? You're supposed to be demanding for us, holy souls. Have you forgotten entirely? And as it says, the Chafetz Chaim explained afterwards that Hashem keeps his Torah. And it says in the Torah that you have to pay a day worker every single day. So therefore, he owes us. He has to bring Mashiach. He promised us. And the day has passed, and he hasn't yet brought. So again, all these things just show us how it is such a reality, how it has to be such a reality. This is not just, as we said, the icing on the cake. This is the perspective, and it changes even the way we live our life now, moment by moment. Now, let's go to the next bracha, the bracha of Shema Kaleinu. Now, Shema Kaleinu is an incredible bracha. The truth is, this is the bracha which crowns all the brachas. What do I mean by that? We say even, so you know, Shema Nesra is not so short. We go through the brachas and our minds, unfortunately, can wander. That's the human nature. Our minds wander. So we don't concentrate always. We don't think all the things we're supposed to be thinking. Comes to Shema Kaleinu, then it's time to say, uh-oh, even if I was somewhere else, I better come back and focus. Because here we are asking Hashem to listen to our voice and to grant us what we are asking for. This is the tefillah, which in a way actually contains all the previous ones. This is where we're saying to Hashem, everything we asked for until now, please receive it. So I'll just read it to you very quickly. Shema Kaleinu, I'm sorry, this is the Nusach Ari, Shema Kaleinu, Hashem Aleikeinu, hear our voice. Hashem Aleikeinu, of Harachaman, merciful Father, Rachem Aleinu, have compassion on us. V'kabel b'rachamim uv'ratzen es tefilaseinu, and accept our tefilas with compassion, with mercy. Kikel shemeya tefilas v'sachanunim ata, because you are a God who hears and listens to the prayers and to the beseeching. Umilfanecha malkeinu reikam al tishivenu, do not turn us away empty-handed. Why? Ki ata shemeya tfilas kolpe. I know this is different than the Nusach Ashkenaz, this word kolpe, but you hear the prayer of everyone, every mouth. Baruch ata Hashem, shemeya tfila, blessed are you Hashem, who listens to our tfila. Just very, very quickly, it's very, very similar. But again, in the Nusach Ashkenaz, Shema Kaleinu Hashem Aleikeinu, right? So listen, hear our voice. Hashem our God, chus v'rachem, right? So have pity and be compassionate, Aleinu, upon us. V'kabel v'rachamim uv'ratzen es tfilaseinu, and accept with compassion and with favor our tfilas. Kikel shemeya tfilas v'sachanunumata, because you are a God who hears prayers and supplications. Umilfanecha malkenu reikam al tishivenu, and from before yourself do not turn us away empty-handed. And then we conclude ki ata shemeya tfilas amcha Yisrael berachamim. That's how Nesach Ashkenaz concludes, a little bit different to the Ari, but similar meaning. But it says, for you hear the prayers of your people of Israel with compassion. Baruch atah Hashem shomea tefila. Blessed are you, Hashem, who hears our prayers. Now, just as a little bit of an introduction, there's differences of opinion as far as in Shemayin Esrei, if a person is permitted to insert their own, you know, their own personal things that are perhaps not clearly mentioned in Shemayin Esrei. So most opinions, actually, a person should really not verbalize anything except for the words of the Shemayin Esrei. However, when it comes to this tefillah, the tefillah of Shema Kaleinu, here you have more opinions that do say, so there's two ways to look at it. Either, this one is for sure, that a person can think anything that they want, not only exactly what the words mean, in other words, any request, any need, anything that's missing, anything that you want, definitely during this tefillah, a person should be thinking about that. But according to many opinions, you can also insert verbally in this tefillah the extra things that have not been covered by the previous brachas. So I'll read you from a very, very great halachic authority, Rabbi Yenis and Eibschitz, very famous. And he says, in this prayer, you should put everything before Hashem to pray to him for all your needs, great or small. Do not refrain from praying to Hashem for anything, be it a soulmate for yourself. This is his word, specific, a few hundred years ago. Be it a soulmate for yourself or one of your children. Pray to Hashem for good merchandise. Pray to Hashem that he grants you success and leads you on the path of honesty. The general rule is there is nothing in daily life for which one cannot pray to Hashem and ask for success or advancement. For anything that you want to pray, do so in your own language. This is the words of Rabbi Yenis and Eibschitz, in your own language, he says. Even if you will stammer or not speak in proper Hebrew, it is as precious to Hashem as if you prayed expressively, clearly, and articulately. By virtue of this prayer, Hashem will hear our voices and our prayers will be effective, because this prayer will certainly be sincere and not just lip service, where the mouth speaks while the heart is elsewhere. This is the words of Rabbi Yenis and Eibschitz, and as you can see, this is the intention as we begin. We should stop for a second just to focus and realize this is the time, and it's almost the last opportunity, because I'll tell you that the next three brachas that we will be learning about next term, they are brachas of thanksgiving, and there we are not permitted to think of our own personal needs. So this is the last opportunity where we are putting in what we want from Hashem for that moment, for that day. This is it. Okay. Just want to see. Yeah. So this is what we say. Actually, in the Torah, the great halachic authority, very clearly it says, Shoyel Adam, a person may ask Tzrachav, his needs, b'shemeya tefila, in this bracha of shemeya tefila, shehi koileles kol habakashes. It encapsulates all the requests. It includes, it contains all the requests. This is the one where we put in our needs, our specific personal needs. Now, just before we go, I could see already, okay, it's such a problem that we will not, I'm so sorry, I went a little too long before, because we will not be able to finish this bracha today, but we'll do as much as we can, because this is a very important bracha, and I do want to take apart a lot of the words. But just as important to go through everything, we have a very interesting idea, because as we said, this is the tefillah where we're asking Hashem to accept all our tefillahs. So here, all the commentaries on the Siddur stop and ask the big question that we asked at the beginning, but again comes to us, what's the idea of davening? What's the idea of asking Hashem for our needs? What do you mean? What's the question? Because if Hashem wants to give it to us, he's going to give it to us. If he doesn't want to give it to us, why is our asking going to change anything? And how dare we ask, so to speak? How weird. What do we say? We know better. We want this, and Hashem, you want something else for us? What is this concept of tefillah? And here specifically asking for what we feel that we need. So we have a few beautiful ways to answer it, a few different angles, if you want to say. So first of all, according to some opinions, we have to remember, even though we are asking for our needs, but one of the things that we said in the Nusach Ari, it says it very clearly, it says, Ki'ata shemeya tefilas kol peh. We are asking Hashem to listen, even at the beginning of all of them. Shema Koileinu. Listen to our voice. Let's not forget that a very important part of this tefillah is just that Hashem hears us. We know from day to day, moment by moment, whenever we meet somebody, sometimes when we talk to somebody, we feel that they're not there and they're not listening. We don't even care sometimes if they're going to do what we ask them. But what we do want is that they should be listening. It is such an important need, and it's such an important, so to speak, feeling of self-respect if when you talk to somebody, you know that they are listening. That's the first thing we're asking. Shema Koileinu. Just listen to our voice. What does this mean? So it's explained. This is the idea of tefillah, is the connection that we have with Hashem. Whether he's going to give us what we ask, whether he's not going to give us. It's not even as important as the fact that we feel that he's listening. So the connection, that's the first thing. Now Rabbi Twersky explains it also very, very beautifully. And he says like this, that many people grapple, he says, with this question, why and how does prayer work, right? Because if a sick person prays for recovery, he's assuming that Hashem has allowed him to become sick, right? So is he to believe that his prayer can make Hashem change his mind? That's how Rabbi Twersky puts the question. So Rabbi Twersky says one of the ways that we can answer it is that we understand and we believe that there's a constant outpouring of kindness from Hashem that Hashem gives to the world. This constant blessing that Hashem is giving to the world. Like he says, the example that we have is like the sun radiates light and it comes into the world and it warms and it makes things grow and it provides light, yes, as we know. But nevertheless, even though the sun is there and the light is coming, sometimes you can be in a dark space. How do you have a dark space if the sun is always giving forth rays of light? Because sometimes something can be blocking between you and the sun. And he says the same thing can happen, that sometimes, even though Hashem is giving all the kindness into the world, there could be a blockage between that bracha that Hashem wants to give you and you, the receiver, receiving it. Sometimes it could be negative actions that you're doing, whatever it may be that's causing that black blockage. So Rabbi Twersky says, genuine, sincere davening brings a person into a closer relationship with Hashem, and the barriers to the divine benevolence are removed. They get taken away. It's like you're going outside into the direct sunlight. Nothing has changed. The sun was there before. Before you went outside, it was there. But now you have changed. You have moved yourself from the dark space to the light space. And now you can receive the sunlight. And that's what Shema Koileinu is. You see, this is what we are doing now. We are moving ourselves into the realization that everything, and we'll develop that, I think it's going to have to be after, but we'll develop it more, that everything comes from Hashem, that all the goodness and all the everything, the whole world comes from Hashem, and we become literally open and be able to receive. And the words that he puts, he says like this, he says, the blessings and improvements in the person's health is not the result of a change in Hashem's will, but of a change in the status of the recipient. That could be all that's missing, as he says. So that's why, because real davening makes a transformation in the person. And the newly emerging person can be receptive of the divine benevolence to which beforehand he wasn't. So actually he's saying two things. One thing is you're changing your position, but you're actually changing yourself, where now you are a true keli, you can receive the brachas from Hashem. I don't know, sometimes I think more on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur we have this feeling. When we go in, and however it will be this year, but we still have our machzor wherever we are, when you open up your machzor to when you close your machzor, you're not the same person. Yom Kippur especially, I feel. The davening changes us. We're just different people. We feel so much more elevated. And as Rabbi Twersky says, now we're a different person. Now we can receive the bracha that Hashem wants to give us. Okay, so as we say, and the idea of also realizing that it all comes from Hashem, so this is a very humbling experience. Tefillah is a humbling experience. Interesting, because on the one hand, we might think of it, oh, I'm demanding. Demanding comes with a feeling of entitlement. But Shema Koileinu, we have to remember, and this is such an important part of the way we daven, tefillah that we call tefillah is not a sense of it. We don't come with a sense of entitlement. You come with a sense of entitlement, you've got the wrong address, you got the wrong siddur, you have everything wrong. This is not about that Hashem owes it to me, and I deserve it, and therefore where is it? This is literally where we humble ourselves, acknowledging that everything is from Hashem. And therefore, without Hashem's kindness, without Hashem's compassion, without Hashem's giving, without Hashem's doing, we will have zero. We are nothing. That's how we come. That's what we said at the beginning of Shemayin Esrei. What do we start with? Hashem has to open our mouth. We can't even talk because we realize how we are nothing. So this is how we approach, how we begin this tefillah. I just want to see if there was one more thing before we, I feel bad, conclude, and we'll have to do it afterwards. Oh, okay, so I'll just share, as we mentioned, and I'll just a little bit elaborate on this idea that we say, Shema Koileinu. This is interesting, because we say, hear our voice. So you know, Shemayin Esrei, we know the halacha is that a person's supposed to be davening very quietly, silently, right? So what does this mean, Shema Koileinu? Because really, there's not a loud voice here. Right? There's no voice. That's the idea of Shemayin Esrei. As we said, it's actually a very humbling experience where we don't necessarily have a loud voice. So all the people who comment on the Siddur, and Rabbi Shimon Schwab also, and the other commentaries say like this, that we're actually asking Hashem to hear the sound of our voice, not just the words, which means what we're referring to is the inner voice, the intention behind the words. Shema Koileinu means not just the words, but what we are thinking, and sometimes we can't even articulate it in our minds, what we are feeling. And that's what we're asking Hashem to tune into. As you can say, sometimes it's actually very beautiful. Sometimes, especially with a child, you see it. You know, a child can be saying nothing, but it's just such a pleasure to hear their voice. You know, when you love somebody, when you want to be with them, when you love them, just their voice, even in the background, it's exciting because you know they're there. We want Hashem to hear our voice, to feel us as we are, so to speak, and what is going on in our hearts and in our thoughts. And that's what Shema Koileinu. So this is the emphasis. The emphasis is the thought, is the what's going on inside. I'll just conclude. It's a famous story, but Rabbi Schwab brings this as an analogy. He says, and it actually, not only is it important that we ask Hashem to listen to our voice, what's going on inside, but we also have to remember that, therefore, we have to have proper intentions while we are davening, right? That our hearts should be in the right place, our mind should be in the right place. But he says, and it's just a cute analogy, he says that we know the famous thing where there was a, you know, in the olden days when there was telegrams, who knows, maybe we'll get back to that day, who knows, everything's the world is so crazy. But anyways, and this son writes his father a telegram and he says, because every you know, word costs, so he says, Father, send me money. Well, the father is so angry. What, the father, send me money? Such a cold, you know, request, no dear father, no nothing, your loving son, nothing nice, no thank you, no please, nothing. So he takes this to the rabbi or to his mentor and he shows him the telegram and he says, I don't want to, what should I do? I can't bring myself to send my son money. Look how he asked me. So this smart mentor looks at the telegram and he reads it to the father. And how does he read it? He reads it putting in every bit of emotion, as if the son was talking. And he says, Father, you know, however, I'm not a good actress, but you know, send me money, like with all the crying and the tears. And then the father says, of course I'm going to send him money. What changed? Nothing changed. Koileinu, that's all it is, the voice, the inner intention, what's going on in our hearts. We ask Hashem that even though many times our mind wanders, many times we don't even say the words correctly. We can even mispronounce some of the words. We don't know what a lot of the words mean in the davening. But what we do know is that we want Hashem to listen to our inner voice, what we need, what we want for ourselves, what we want for our families, what we want for the Jewish people, for the whole world, for the health and the well-being. And this is really our big request, Shema Koileinu. And I ask for forgiveness.